speak to the Vietnamese from Africa, Haiti, South Africa, the UK, China, and India.
From Africa.
How is social media helping combat corruption in African nations?
From Haiti.
What is the impact of social media in Haiti?
From China.
China is big. Esports are big. Just how big are esports in China?
From the UK.
Can you treat your fear of heights in virtual reality?
From South Africa.
How has media changed in South Africa since apartheid?
From India.
Why did Twitter go nuts in India over an episode of Quantico?
All this and more coming on OWWR, Old Westbury Radio, streaming live from the State University of New York College.
Social media is playing a role in the battle to expose corruption in some African nations. Kelly, there are a lot of different countries in Africa, some of which have serious issues with corruption. Can you give us an example of a specific nation in Africa where social media is playing a role in the battle over corruption?
All the social media platforms are playing a huge role in the exploitation of corruption throughout the entire African continent. Specifically, there's a lot going on in Kenya and Nigeria. All of the information that is being exploited through all of the social media platforms is coming through the youth, and they're seeing what's going on around them and how they can change it, how they can be an advocate, and how they can change people's opinions and make their nation a better place to live. There were students in Kenya that were able to find out through social media that the National Youth Services, which is a place that provides skill training for young people, in Kenya, they obtained $78 million in unaccounted spending, not having to do with the training of the youth. Believe it or not, it's the youth of the country is behind a lot of the internet stir regarding the corruption. Unlike their predecessors, they have access to so much more info in so many different ways. It's inevitable for them to see what's truly going on around them. When used correctly, the social media platforms are a great way for their voices to be heard, especially the ones that are usually silenced. It's unfortunate that their government intervenes and censors what people can see and not see.
So what exactly is the social media doing for the cause?
So Faith Pienaar, a nonprofit management fellow, said that millennials have access to the internet that people never had before. Just lets them go on the internet and leverage cross-border connections to challenge internal problems such as corruption. Without social media, there would be minimal to no ways for people to view what valuable information is on the internet regarding funds being spent where they shouldn't be and content being censored by the government. It's a work in progress, but social media is helping along the way. So global media news, I'm feeling good spot to be.
Thanks, Kelly. Let's head over to the Caribbean and the beautiful island nation of Haiti. Lutheria Pierre is looking at the impact of social media in Haiti. Lutheria, give us an introduction to social media use in Haiti. How popular is social media in Haiti, and which are the most popular social media platforms?
2010 was a massive increase in a lot of news cases were saying that the way Asian Americans and a lot of Americans were aware of what was going on was not to the news, but through social sites like Twitter, Facebook, for the people that had access to the internet were posting pictures and keeping people updated as much as they could. Ever since then, it's been a spike of social media and stuff like that to me. One of the most recent theories that took place is the Petrochemical Challenge. It's almost like a movement that Haitians started with the Petrochemical corruption that's going on right now. It's basically about how the Haitian community is upset with the government because the government has apparently embezzled $2 million from Venezuela that funded Haiti as far as the FBA goes, and one of the Haitian writers and journalists started off a campaign through social media, through Twitter, and it spiked everywhere. Haitian Americans were aware, people kept the movement going on, community people were aware of what's going on, and I think that one of the main things about the Caribbean is a lot of people know what's going on, but they don't know the full line, only because the news can only tell you so much, and watch you so much, so I think that the biggest platform getting things out there is Twitter and Facebook. One of their most popular sites is Twitter, only off the same fact that a lot of Haitians, for some reason, attract to Twitter and they can post as many doing videos. I know for Asian Americans myself, like, we listen to news through like radio. So I think, and usually with the radio, the connection can be poor. You can't really, you know, hear the full line. So I think social media like helps it. You can actually read a story, and you can actually see the pictures and see what's going on. As far as the actual challenge goes, the writer's name is Gilbert Jr., and he posted a photo with his eyes blindfolded while holding the sign, writing for the X, saying, "Where did the money go?" And people started just reposting the same picture or giving the same eye blindfolded with the sign, basically questioning the Asian government so that they can get an answer, because I think that's everybody's big question right now is, where did it go and how are we getting it back? So from there, everybody's been reposting, and it actually led to one of the prime ministers getting fired because they, you know, the investigation and everything going on, they found out like what was happening. I think that without that social media platform, it wouldn't have gotten out there the way it did, and the change wouldn't have been made. So I think it's definitely a big
deal. So going on to the, like, any future events that might happen, do you think that Twitter and Facebook could be a better platform just to get connected? Like, if there's there's something big going on, like a storm, or let's say something about politics, like you just said, do you think in the future it might be better broadcast to Twitter, and that might be the future of this whole, like, straight-up information?
I definitely think so. I think that the radio, yes, it helps in a sense, but I think social media platforms help it way more and gets the information out quicker, because even in 2010, when everything took place, what CBS News was saying was that people weren't able to tweet right away, like, they were getting fast news quick, and that's what people, you know, don't know. They want to know what's going on, so at all times. So I think that the future really lies in the social media hands. I think it's just the technology, the technology that has to get advanced in order for them to, you know, do certain things, but I think that's definitely a start.
So you mentioned this post about, you said that he was blindfolded, and are there, like, would that be one of those posts that just goes viral at a very important time? Do you think that that could be very key, not just for
the country? Yeah, definitely, because everybody who reposts the picture will be the challenge themselves to be blindfolded as well. I guess to show this, like, the sense of not seeing what's really going on. And, you know, they have that question, and it's like people are trying to ignore it. So with him starting that picture, it just, like, followed everywhere, and a lot of people look at that as something that's symbolic, because somebody of his, you know, caliber and his popularity does something like that, it strikes the people.
I kind of like the idea of, like, blinded unity, yeah. The entire, just, yeah, we all don't know what's going on, but at the same time still posting it.
Exactly. For Global Media News, I'm with Eric here, back to you.
Thank you, Theria. Up next, Media News from China. Just how big are esports in China, and why is that creating tension with the government in China? Is it only a game, or is this politics?
Welcome back to Global Media News. I'm Christina Perez. Cody Zachman is on the esports beat today for Asia from China. Cody, can you talk about the growth in esports?
Esports has become a worldwide phenomenon, and China is front and center. Some big game events have been going on for years. The esports industry reached up to $1 billion by the end of 2018.
What makes esports so popular in China?
Gaming lets people be connected with each other. Another reason is due to workers having more commutes in China. People have more commutes that need to kill time. So this allows them to pass that time with gaming. Like the smartphones increasing, high-speed internet, the popularity of people like that is, it's helping the industry grow.
What's been China's government reaction to esports rise in popularity?
With China, China has censorship. So they have a pattern of banning Western media platforms that seem to be growing. So Facebook and Twitter have also been banned there. And they haven't had Twitter since 2010, but there are rumors that a censored search engine is being developed. And then just to go off that, the video game industry has become so big that there were talks about making gaming an Olympic sport. The head of the Olympics were going back and forth, and they decided that they're not going to be able to do it because of the violence that the gaming industry produces.
What do you think is their goal for this?
Their goal, I think, like, like anything else in China, I think, you know, they're for it as much as it's going to grow, but I think once it reaches a certain limit, they're going to end it because they don't want to grow too much where people get comfortable and people can gain access to the media. For Golden Media News, I'm Cody at Supers.
Thanks, Cody. Are you afraid of heights? Do you have a phobia? Can virtual reality technology be used to treat your phobias?
Many people have fears and phobias. We live in a world that makes us very anxious. Can new technologies help us deal with our fears? Can immersive virtual reality technology be used therapeutically? Stephen Shaw has been following news from the United Kingdom, where psychologists from Oxford University are working with VR to treat acrophobia, the fear of heights. Stephen, what is it about the VR experience that can help us with our anxieties?
Well, for the VR experience, the patients are being put to the test through this experience that they are put into a simulation, and the simulation could be put into the location where they fear. They could be put in the simulation where they're on top of a bridge. They could be put in the simulation where they're on top of a 10-story building. In virtual reality, they could adjust to their surroundings.
Gotcha. How is VR technology being used to treat the fear of heights?
The VR technology is being used to put patients in a simulation. Through the simulation led by an instructor, the VR puts patients in a location that they fear from a simulation point of view.
Gotcha. So it'd be something like looking out of a cliff or like the top of the building.
Top of the building. It could also be in a tree, on top of the height of a tree if you were to get a cat out of a tree.
Gotcha. Interesting. Can you describe the patient's VR experience?
The patient's VR experience have been successful. It's been a 70% of the VR participants have said they no longer have a fear of heights since participating in the VR therapy.
Would you recommend this therapy to a person suffering from phobias?
I would recommend this VR therapy to anyone that has a phobia. I think that the VR technology is helpful to people who suffer acrophobia. Through this new technology, people can conquer their fears. It gives people hope to move forward. Even, I would say, myself, if they had this in America, when I was a kid, I used to have a fear of amusement parks on the Ferris wheel and the high diving board. So I think that this could be really helpful to anyone who has a phobia and wants to conquer it.
So for someone that has this stuff, fear of heights, like me, what would you say to them or me?
I would tell you to consider trying virtual reality. I think it could be very useful, and it also shows that VR could be used for other causes other than gaming. For Global Media News, I'm Stephen Shaw. Back to you, Miguel.
Thanks, Stephen. My co-host Christina Pierre-Louise is here to talk about media in South Africa. The racist system of legal segregation known as apartheid in South Africa lasted from 1948 into the early 1990s, and the creation of a new democratic government in 1994. What was the media like under apartheid? What has changed since the African National Congress has been running South Africa for almost 25 years? Is there a free press and a free media in South Africa now that there is a democratic government that's not based on white supremacy? Christina, sorry for the brief introduction to media and journalism under apartheid. How free was the press under apartheid?
Apartheid, also known as separate development, was a policy through the Population Registration Act that controlled the relationship and interaction of blacks and whites in South Africa. Their purpose was to segregate and discriminate against immigrants outside of rape. During apartheid, many laws and policies were put into place that prohibited different races from living in the same areas, working in the same businesses, obtaining the same education, and by segregating schools. Laws kept anyone who was not white from being involved in government and even forbid public communication between the races. During apartheid, most of the media content related were censored or banned. television didn't come to South Africa until 1975, mainly due to the government knowing the influence television had on socialization. They wanted to keep that away from their citizens. Media being broadcast in South Africa required permission from the government, and most of the time could not be viewed in South Africa, rather they were viewed in other areas of the world. The printing in South Africa did not portray the reality of the circumstances taking place. The media very much controlled and pushed the agenda of keeping the races separate while presenting every race to be equal to one another, which was not the case. Being that such a segregation took place, the influence and control that the government had on media was not hard to instill. There were racism within the way that news were reported, such as small amount of tragedies taking place within the white community in South Africa, having a lot of coverage and receiving a lot of empathy from viewers, whereas much higher levels of tragedies taking place in black communities received little to no coverage. After apartheid, media coverage in South Africa became a lot easier. They banned censorship. When media coverage was lifted, reporters no longer had to censor what they reported on. The realities of what was really going on in South Africa, such as racial injustice, discrimination, brutality, were being reported on. It became safer for journalists because prior to the end of apartheid, journalists often had to put their lives at risk trying to report what was really going on during the apartheid. They faced a lot of harassment, abuse, jailing, and attempting to cover the truth. For Global Media News, I just think it was excellent.
Thanks, Christina. We'll be right back with Media News from India. Why did Twitter and social media erupt in India over an episode of Quantico? And why are Indians watching Quantico anyway?
Jennifer Sadana is on the media and India beat for Global Media News. This week, Jennifer is covering controversy that spread on social media in India about the role that Priyanka Chopra played in the episode of Quantico. Jennifer, what was the episode? The Quantico episode about.
The Quantico episode showed Indians planning terrorist attacks in Iran, England, and Pakistan, and with intention. Many Indians were upset with this episode because they were shown in a negative light, and many believe that people are unaware of the Indian and Pakistan controversy. So, Priyanka Chopra received a lot of backlash on Twitter, and one Indian woman even tweeted, "The entire episode was not just an attack on India. Peddling Pakistani agenda that Indians make elaborate plots to claim Pakistan, shame on Priyanka Chopra for even thinking such a storyline is acceptable." And then she hashtagged Quantico apology. Another commentator who happens to be an Indian woman bloggist tweeted, "ABC apologizes to Indians for wrongfully portraying Hindus as terrorists in Quantico. Meanwhile, the Indian actress who acted in it is still to issue an apology. Such shamelessness. We make them such stars, and they make us terrorists and get away with it. Never forgive, never forget." I believe that Priyanka Chopra got a major amount of backlash because she is so big in the Indian film industry, and the fact that she is the first Indian actress to receive a leading role in an American television show. And she's so famous that everyone thought that it was extremely offensive when she was portraying Indians in Night of Light, even though she was from India. Priyanka Chopra did apologize, and she issued an apology on Twitter. She said, "I'm extremely saddened and sorry that some sentiments have been hurt by a recent episode of Quantico. That was not and would never be my intention. I sincerely apologize. I'm a proud Indian, and that will never change." But although she apologized, Quantico as a show as a whole did not receive the amount of backlash that she did, which was extremely unfair, because Quantico even said that she had nothing to do with the storyline, and people blamed her for being associated.
How did Twitter, social media platforms in general affect the conflict that year?
The shows that social media makes a big impact on fans, critics, and celebrities' lives. It's easy to speak your thoughts and it's easy to bash, but access to tweeting celebrities makes it very easy to put them in a positive or negative light, in which this case was a negative light.
Do you think that it was hypocritical of people to criticize Chopra versus not criticizing the show?
Yeah, I think it was extremely controversial, the fact that Quantico was not criticized, but Priyanka Chopra was, because she had nothing to do with the storyline, and she wasn't even involved in what the episode was about. She just plays a role, but people were mad that she was playing such a role and portrayed India in this light.
Do do you think that she could have objected to the role she wanted to?
I think since she's the main role, I think there could have been, like, she could have taken the time to say her thoughts on the episode, but I believe that since it's her first American television show that she's premiering in, that she didn't have much of a say. For Global Media News, I'm Jennifer Sedona. Back to you, Christina.
Thanks, Jennifer, and thank you, Miguel Castro, for hosting the show this week. Thanks for the fabulous engineers, Brandon Johnson, and many thanks to our producer, Christopher.
Today, we heard the reports from Kelly Hentz, Lucero Pierre, Christina Pierre Louise, Stephen Shaw, Jennifer Sedona, and Cody Safran.
Global Media's News is brought to you by OWWR, Old Westbury Radio, and the Media and Communications Department here at State University of New York, College at Old Westbury.
For more media news and resources, check out our latest post on globalmedianews.org, where you can listen to all of our webcasts and even subscribe to our podcast feed.
Follow us on Twitter at OWWRGNN. Use our Twitter feed to keep up with the latest news of aspiring journalists and media professionals. That's at OWWRGNN.
Stay tuned for more great programming coming up next on OWWR, Old Westbury Radio.